Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. State finance leaders say South Dakota could face a revenue shortfall in fiscal year 2020. Congressman Dusty Johnson wants to see the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement to the House floor for ratification before August. And a new poll shows Governor Noem's disapproval rating is up. Dakota political junkie John Schaff is with us today. He's a professor of political science and department chair at Northern State University in Aberdeen, and he's the author of an upcoming book titled Abraham Lincoln's Statesmanship and the Limits of Liberal Democracy. John, welcome back to the program.
Good to be here. And it's not only an upcoming book, it's actually available now. So if people want to go to Amazon, they can purchase the book.
It's up and
released
coming.
Up and coming,
It's up and coming, and it's available today, Abraham Lincoln's Statesmanship. We're going to have you on the program to talk about just that book in the near future. So
I'm looking forward to that, too.
As am I. And John is joining us from the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation Studio at Northern State University in Aberdeen. So let's talk about some of these top stories of the week, and let's start with the money, because not as much money is coming into South Dakota as we would like. And it might be looking a little bleak in the future. What's going on?
Well, I think there are two things going on. It seems like South Dakota's economy is moving counter to the national economy. The national economy, on the whole, is doing quite well. It looks like we're heading for a year of probably around 3% growth in our GDP, which is good. It's not great, but it's good. The unemployment rate is quite low. The economy was going well enough that the Federal Reserve actually raised interest rates late last year, though it looks like those might be going down in the coming months. But I think what South Dakota is facing is simply an effect of what is going on in the agricultural economy. I had a farmer friend of mine say to me over the weekend that this administration, he meant the Trump administration, has done nothing for farmers. And I think we know, and we'll probably get to trade in a little bit, but the inability, the hampering of trade for our agricultural goods, particularly to China, has had a very adverse effect on South Dakota agriculture, and the inability to access markets around the world has been a big problem. And I think, you know, the agriculture economy, you know, and weather doesn't help with that. Obviously a lot of people got in late planting this year. And I think there's a lot of anxiety within the agricultural community. And so when ag is not spending money, that means that the state is not taking in the revenue that we would like. And I think that's really what's probably at the heart of this state budget issues.
And this is not a group of people who can go for a long period of time in these circumstances. People can lose their farms, file bankruptcy very quickly because of the nature of farming. So this could really get a lot worse a lot sooner than people would like.
Yeah, I don't offer myself as an expert in ag economy, but from what I understand is one of the things that is happening over the last handful of years, it's becoming more expensive for farmers to borrow money, partially because of the banking collapse of about 10 years ago. There's a lot more caution. And so the amount of liquidity that banks are requiring farmers to operate with, and then the interest rates that ag has to borrow at, and you know, it's just simply a fact of life that on a year-to-year basis, your average farm is borrowing a lot of money to get their season going, and then hopefully come harvest, they can make all that money back and more. But as it becomes harder and harder to borrow, I think that again, that anxiety in the agriculture community means that they're not spending the money that they normally would, because the incentives are to sort of hold tight and see if they can sort of weather both the literal weather storms and then the metaphorical storms of trade and interest rates. Mm-hmm.
There was a promise that farmers would be taken care of by this administration as trade deals were hammered out In the form of subsidies, although farmers don't want that. They want, to sell their soybeans. But it clearly isn't enough either.
Well, they've done some of that. No, they've released some money into the billions of dollars to help offset the perceived losses. I mean, well, real losses, but the perception that they're losing out because of trade. Here's a way to make up for that. But on an individual basis, if you go operator by operator, that money is not going to cover what is being lost in the lack of markets. And so the best thing that the administration can do, and every once in a while you get this indication that there's a break coming, and then it never seems to quite manifests itself in a reality that there's going to be a break with China, and that the markets are going to open up, and it doesn't seem as though that has happened, at least not to the extent that we're seeing an immediate impact. And I think until that happens, until we get this trade situation figured out, our local producers are going to be hesitant to spend large amounts of money on anything. Mm-hmm. In some cases, not able to spend the money that they would like to, and they're going to be cautious, and that's going to hurt the state's revenue. And so, I think we'll be interesting to see what happens in the next legislative session, or when the governor gives a budget address, as she will in December, how exactly these numbers shake out.
Hmm. And the the Wayfair decision and the idea of South Dakota collecting online sales tax. People were saying from the very beginning, don't get too excited. This isn't necessarily the enormous windfall that a lot of people think it's going to be, and it's not.
And it's not.
So far.
And it appears to have been true, yes.
Yeah.
That's why I say it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, there are people in the state, accountants and actuaries, who are trying to figure these things out. And eventually, when the governor gives an address, those numbers will be produced. And is there a way that some of that money from internet sales tax revenue can offset what we're losing on the other side? Or if maybe, again, a national economy, which is essentially healthy, can produce enough revenue that kind of by the whole rising tide lifting the boat of South Dakota, maybe somehow this can be offset. But I think the idea that the state's going to be engaging in any kind of rambunctious spending in our next next year is probably out the window.
In fact, there could, if we head into difficult times for people, the amount of people using social services can increase very, very quickly.
Yeah, there's the reciprocal relationship there that often we saw this in the national recession of 08, 09, that you end up in a worst case scenario where the government is losing revenue while people need help more than ever. And this is how you end up. There are lots of reasons, but at least this is one reason why we end up with national annual deficits of $1.2, right. $1.3 trillion. There are other factors in there, but that's probably the major factor is revenue down while social service expenditures exploded.
All right. So you mentioned Congressman Dusty Johnson. I think it was U.S. Senator John Thune who very recently got up talking about some of President Trump's comments. And after Mitch McConnell addressed the comments, Senator Thune said, hey, let's talk about the economy. Well, that's a national economy, not necessarily the South Dakota economy. And then we have U.S. Congressman Dusty Johnson saying, that USMCA thing that's supposed to replace NAFTA, let's get that done.
Yeah, and so I think part of this, I think, is an optics. I don't know how much South Dakota agriculture is going to benefit from kind of this renegotiation, you might say, of NAFTA. As I understand it, there are provisions, especially for dairy. But we know that, for example, Canadian beef competes with American beef, and if we can compete on a more even scale and find new markets, it's still the case that Canada is the largest trade partner with the United States. Contrary to popular belief, it is not China. It is obviously because of geography, because of location. Canada is our biggest trade partner, and the more we can open up those markets, the better. But I think what in the interests of, whether it's Senator Thune or Representative Johnson, I think what they want is a win. so they can say we're making some sort of progress on trade. And because it, as I understand it, the renegotiation, I don't think we're going to end up with markets that are that different than we've had over the last, 25 years since NAFTA passed, but trying to at least keep things on an even keel, keep them the same as they were with NAFTA. And that would be a good thing. 'Cause, you know, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, we were worried about trade wars, especially with Canada. And one of the things that markets look at is they're looking at potential of the future. And so when they're anxious about there might be a future trade war, to give them assurance, to give them a kind of a sense of stability in our Canadian and Mexican market, that would be good even for South Dakota agriculture, though I'm not sure if it would actually literally expand much of the market for South Dakota goods.
All right. What's the holdup in Washington with the trade relationship with China? Is it we just can't come to an agreement, or is it prioritization?
I think that it's probably it's a high priority. I think that the Chinese, there's a game of poker going on, and the Chinese feel like they hold a pretty good hand, and the sense that we need them more than they need us. And so obviously what they've done, the main thing that China needs is foodstuffs. So there is a report, they've had an outbreak of swine flu in China. And so people should expect their pork prices to go up relatively soon. I saw yesterday that the Chinese pork imports have increased something like 60% over a recent period of time. I don't know what that time period was offhand, but they seem to be able to get the foodstuffs they need without as heavy reliance on the American market. So if they can get what they need from whether it's Asian, Eastern Hemisphere markets, or they've been making trade deals with South America, if they can get what they need without the U.S. producer, well, then it is the case that we need them more than they need us. And so in that sense, the United States is playing with a bad hand. And as the Trump administration tries to improve that hand, I don't want to abuse the poker metaphor, but I don't know. Maybe we might have like a pair of twos, and it's just not conducive to convincing the Chinese to make large concessions in our direction.
Yeah. Let's move on because I want to make sure to talk about Governor Kristi Noem's disapproval and approval ratings. And first, the numbers are out. 49% approval rating hasn't changed, but her disapproval rating has increased from 32% to 40%. And that is according to a Morning Consults poll. I'm reading the article in the Sioux Falls Argus Leader about some of those numbers. First and foremost, do we care about an approval and disapproval rating poll?
I guess it makes for interesting conversation. I'm not sure how important it is to actual operation of government. Most elected officials, especially executives, whether it's a president or a governor, will see their popularity wane within their first year or two. And I think it's probably the case that I think we've talked of this before, that Kristi Noem's first legislative session was a little bit uneven. I think there were some growing pains there and trying to, getting an administration up and running. But what tends to happen is an elected official comes in with a certain air of popularity. That's why they got elected in the first place. But then you have to actually govern. And what Kristi Noem has had to do in some cases on things like, say, nursing homes was something that was big in the legislative session, is you have to end up making tough decisions. And inevitably, you end up alienating parts of your coalition. Then over time, obviously, we just had an election, so let's not look too far in the future to a 2022 election. But eventually, assuming she wants to run for reelection, she'll have to reassemble that coalition. To the extent it means anything, I think that's what it means, is just simply in governing and through a sort of rocky first legislative session, She's seen a little bit of disapproval increase, and time will tell whether she can rectify that, or whether this second session, for example, goes a little bit more smoothly than this first one does.
So it's significant as well, not only because of the percentage jump, but because it puts her in the top 10 most unpopular governors at this point, eighth in that list. She's been compared to Governor Janklow in how she governs and sort of the way she uses authority. Do you see that as a fair comparison, or is that as a risk for her, or will that end up paying off for her?
Well, that comparison. If that's the model she's trying to model herself after, I think if one is going to choose the Bill Janklow model, I think the best thing to be is Bill Janklow.
I don't think she would say that. I mean, I don't. Yeah. That's certainly never come out of her office that I've heard.
Yeah. But it's because he was sort of a unique personality for good and for ill. And to try to be aggressive in the use of the governor's office requires a certain kind of personality. And I mean, I don't know. And when I say I don't know, I really don't know whether Kristi Noem can operate that way. I think what you do see, like in that same poll, I think what we see is that she's simply not as popular as John Thune and Mike Rounds. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, Kristi Noem has seemed to not have that sort of kind of natural backing of the people of South Dakota the way those other two elected officials have. And the people have not kind of rallied around her. She doesn't have that kind of, especially with John Thune, that sort of aura of inevitability, of invincibility, and has never really quite, I don't know if you will, sealed the deal with the people of South Dakota. And maybe at this point she never will, but she's won a lot of elections, so I guess she's done well enough. So she's got something going for her.
What are some of the things that you think hurt her during that legislative session? The hemp legislation comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's an example of things like that, or even the civics test with education, where it seemed like they had some ideas and they didn't quite come in prepared. And I don't think that they had cultivated the legislature well enough. And so in a couple of cases, they sort of got caught. And so maybe they didn't anticipate how much their opposition to the hemp bill was going to be so pervasive. And her veto was going to kind of go over like a lead balloon. And I think they thought on some of their education matters that things were going to go more smoothly.
I mean, she got a standing ovation during the State of the State when she talked about civics. Put a civics education bill on my desk. They were on their feet, and it never passed.
And it didn't happen. So whether that's because, the devil in the details, people end up not liking, the concept is there. Like, and a lot of these things, hemp and some of these education things, I think will come back. And I suspect what will happen is that the administration is going to be better prepared and will have spent some time cultivating legislative support. And so they don't get caught the way maybe they were caught in this legislative session. A little bit maybe unprepared or underprepared.
So is it fair to say that if you're looking at somebody's disapproval rating, you're also including a lot of people who didn't like her in the first place, and now they're just, not necessarily her, her core supporters, and then that brings to mind her Keystone XL pipeline package and tribal relations. Are people on the other side invigorated and, against her because of what they see coming with Keystone XL and the efforts to sort of figure out what that looks like in South Dakota? She's got strong ideas about that.
It's true. I think you're intimating those people were probably never with her in the first place.
Yeah, that's a real question for you, John. Like, when you measure disapproval, is it measuring people who voted for her and then are like, I don't like the job she's doing? Or are we measuring also people who, voted for Billy Sutton in the first place and now they're just really, they don't like what she's doing?
Yeah, I think what happens when you're kind of this singular individual, like an executive, so I mean like governors and presidents, is when you get elected, people voted for Kristi Noem for all sorts of reasons. Maybe they like her because she's a social conservative. Maybe they just liked her because she's a Republican. Maybe because she's a woman. Maybe because she's not a Democrat or whatever. There are umpteen zillion reasons why you could vote for Kristi Noem. And that's what we call that, a coalition of minorities. But then as you govern, eventually, inevitably, you're going to annoy some of that coalition. And she probably succeeded in doing that. And that's not a bad thing. There's nothing, anyone who's in leadership knows that there's nothing wrong with having enemies as long as they're the right enemies for the right reasons. And a leader who doesn't have any opposition is probably, doesn't have any enemies is probably someone who's not really doing their job. Because making tough decisions means you're going to have to annoy some people. And something like Keystone is maybe a good example of that, is that she's got convictions on that. She thinks she's doing the right thing. And inevitably, that's going to there's a lot of motivation on the other side of that. And that's going to make her some enemies. But that doesn't mean she's wrong. But she's just, that this is part of trying to be an aggressive leader. And then, politically, you have to figure out, do the chips fall in a certain way that, she can still, in a handful of years, still accumulate 51% of the population who is willing to vote for. And also, not supporting is not the same thing as I wouldn't vote for her again. So we shouldn't make the mistake of saying that's a one-to-one thing. There are a lot of people who will say, I'm annoyed at Kristi Noem, who would never imagine voting for a Democrat.
Right. Well, next year is going to be quite a test for her. You hear that all the time when people are talking about Keystone XL and what's coming in the state of South Dakota. John Schaaf, thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.